The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Football Social Daily. It's the last day of the internationals of this particular break and indeed of the year. England just need one point to secure their place at the Qatar World Cup. And a full shortlist has been released for the Ballon d'Or. It's not particularly short, but we're going to look through the players that have caught our eye on that. My name is Ant McGinley, and after 20 months, I'm not alone in the back bedroom. I've actually got real people with me in the same room. We're all COVID secure, so at a distance of about 3.5 metres. Facing me, I have Newcastle fan Marley Anderson, as is West Ham supporter and boss of all things Sports Social. It's Jim Salverson.
Hello.
So let's start with news that we've been talking about for the last couple of days. In fact, all weekend we've been expecting it. And it's been confirmed earlier this morning that Dean Smith is the brand new head coach of Norwich City. Now, we've talked a lot about this and the other candidates that were in there. I mean, first of all, he doesn't miss a trick, really. He's had about 7 days out of work. He's managed to squeeze in a holiday. Dean Smith is a man that really maximises his time. What's his time going to be like at Norwich?
I think it's going to start with relegation. I don't think anyone could come into that Norwich City job and keep them up at the moment. Even Sam Allardyce would struggle to keep them in the Premier League. So I think it is going to start with relegation, but I think Norwich City are probably quite accepting of that as well. I think they appreciate the situation that they find themselves in. Simply put, they haven't got the squad to keep themselves in the league, and it's all going to be about rebuilding for next season. And Dean Smith is a man who knows how to get a team from the Championship to the Premier League. The slightly different thing that they need to do this year, above what they've done in previous seasons, is become a regular Premier League team to stop that bouncing back and forth, back and forth. And Smith's proven he could do that with Aston Villa. He knows how to bring a team up from the Championship and keep in the Premier League. And yes, Aston Villa had vast wealth to do that. They were able to spend money, be it from the Jack Grealish transfer or be from investment from the owners. And it probably won't be the similar or won't be the same situation at Norwich City. But I think it could be an interesting appointment. I think he could stabilise that football club. And he'll certainly bring him back up from the Championship, but I can't see him saving him in the short term.
Interestingly that you mentioned the money there. Your club's just come into a lot of money, Marley, up at Newcastle.
Have we?
Not been mentioned.
But that shows you that just spending money alone isn't going to guarantee you success. I mean, it's got to be part of a bigger framework. Your team's been in this situation for a little while now that Norwich are facing themselves with. You're kind of established, I guess, but it's just been a nervous time for you in the Premier League. What is it that Smith, you think, has to do to make that transition that Jim says from going from being a yo-yo club to a club that can actually maintain and build up regularity in the Premier League?
That's a golden question for Norwich fans. I think they've been wondering that for about 5 or 6 years now, maybe more. I don't know. I don't know how Norwich stay up, because the problem is with Norwich is the finances. They're simply not rich enough to compete in the top flight. And in the Championship, they're one of the richer clubs. Not too rich, but they're rich enough to get it done, and they're better than everyone on the pitch. But that yawning chasm between the Championship and the Premier League is just massive, and you've got to bridge it with cash. They haven't had enough, so I feel like this appointment is kind of like planning for 3 years' time. Like, we're going to go down this season. He's going to bring us back up next season, and we'll see what we can do the year after that, because that is essentially where Norwich probably see themselves in the next couple of years, going down and coming back up again, having another go, and sort of seeing what situation Dean Smith can cultivate in that time, because they haven't been good enough this year. It's going to take an absolute miracle for them to do anything this year. So go down, regroup, see what happens, see what Smith can bring into the club, what players he can attract, and see what he can do if they come back up in you know, 2 years' time. So it's a bit of a weird one now, because they haven't even gone down, but we're all sort of expecting it with 27 games to go, whatever it is.
If you took the money out of the situation that Newcastle United have at the moment, who would you say was in? Would you still say Newcastle were in the stronger position than Norwich? Because they're on the same points for the season.
Yeah.
So they've both got new managers. You've got Eddie Howe, they've got Dean Smith. Mm. I mean, in my head, it's a no-brainer, because Norwich City are doomed and Newcastle United. I think even if Eddie Howe doesn't go and spend loads of money in January, I still fancy them to be safe, because I think they've probably just about got the players, and I don't see that with Norwich.
Yeah, I think you're about right. I think with Norwich, like, Farke's a good manager and he's done well with them, but you've just seen them at their top end. Like, you've seen that's as good as Norwich get. You know, the likes of Cantwell and Pookie, if you can keep them quiet, that's it. You essentially beat them.
Well, Cantwell's not even been playing much this season. No, it doesn't seem to. It seems to have fallen out with Farke.
And also, Billy Gilmore hasn't appeared much either.
That was his big mistake. Gilmore can get in that Chelsea team. Why can't he get in the Norwich team? Mm. Like, it's bizarre. With the Newcastle thing, I just think with Newcastle, they're just performing way below what they can. And that's a Bruce problem. So that's why there's so much excitement about Eddie Howe, because he's actually trained the team and they've been doing drills, passing and dribbling practice.
That's seen as an improvement, isn't it? Well, the boss is here. Yeah. Wow.
I
want to ask, is this a reflection more of how competitive the Premier League is, or is this an indictment of how things are at those clubs that are struggling down the bottom? Because obviously they want to do well. They want to stay there. They'll be doing their best. They'll be bringing in people both behind the scenes and on the pitch when they can to keep them there and have survival. So is it that they're getting it wrong, or is it just that it's so competitive in the Premier League, the margins are so fine?
I think Marley's right. It comes down mostly, depressingly, to money. And you look at the teams that are down there at the bottom: Norwich City, Newcastle United, Burnley. Your three bottom teams in the Premier League.
Two of the smallest budgets.
Yeah.
And one previously of the smallest, with no money being spent.
That's it. I mean, I haven't got the details in front of me, but I wager that over the last 5 years, those teams are probably the teams that have spent the least in terms of net spend and player recruitment. It wouldn't be...
Well, there was that thing, wasn't there? Did you see it going around last week of if Lampard took over at Norwich, he was worth more than Norwich. Like his estimated value is like 66 million and Norwich is his 25 million.
Wow.
Or 30 million. That's crazy. Something like that. So that puts it into context, really.
I think there is the league is getting more competitive, because I think clubs are getting richer. And you look at, there's a fair few teams in the league at the moment who have got big investors who aren't necessarily challenging in the top six, like Wolverhampton Wanderers, Aston Villa. They've all got money to spend, but they're not necessarily challenging at the moment. And that's raised the bar for everyone, I think, because you have to spend more just to keep pace with mid-table. But at the same time, the teams that are coming up, there seems to be, you might disagree with this, but there seems to be a disconnect between the Championship and the Premier League in terms of what style of football works. And a team like Norwich City can absolutely steamroll the Championship. They can play the best football in the division, but then they try and play that football in the Premier League, and it's more difficult than maybe a team who plays a slightly less expansive style of football, because you're playing suddenly against Premier League defences that can cope better with the attacking football that you want to play in the Championship. So these teams like Norwich, who want to pass the ball around and they want to play on the break and they want to play fast football, it does well for them in the Championship, but it's more difficult to then make that transition into the Premier League and play that football in the top division.
So what's the difference between, say, Norwich and Brentford? Because Brentford, again, small parts
of the world, different colour kits.
No, but
the names spelled differently.
I don't think there's that much difference at all, really.
Well, the thing is, what I'm thinking is, like, Jim, I completely agree with you, because they're looking at two seasons where they've steamrolled the Championship and then come into the Premier League and just been the worst team in there, sadly, for any fans of the team.
This Norwich City side are pretty much the same side that went down from the Premier League two seasons ago.
Yeah.
So there is no element of surprise there. There's no working out how to play against them. Whereas Brentford, it's kind of almost the Sheffield United situation where no one knows quite how to deal with them. And actually, if you look at Brentford's results during October and November, they've started to slip away. There aren't quite
lost
as many surprises.
So
people are sort of working them out. So I think it's a lot of that. I mean, you can talk about Brentford's recruitment and their playing style, and which both appear to be excellent, but it'll be, I think there's still a little bit of proof to be seen there as to whether they will, they might be okay this season, whether they can follow up next season and stay in the division, who knows?
I just feel like it's very unsporting and uncompetitive for us to be writing off a team already. And we're not the only one saying that. With, as you said, like 27 games to go, like almost three quarters of the season left to go. But with that, you're looking at the minute with your bottom five teams, four of them have already changed their manager this season. So we're writing off Smith and Norwich quite clearly by that. But out of the other three, considering that three teams will be going down, who do you think's most likely to stay up? You've got Eddie Howe just coming at Newcastle, Steven Gerrard just coming at Villa, and Ranieri at Watford. Out of those three, if you had to pick one of them to stay up and the others would go down, who are you going to go for?
Aston Villa. All day.
To go down?
No, to stay up.
Oh, sorry.
The question's to stay up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Aston Villa. I mean,
sorry, I was thinking about going down.
But is that about Aston Villa or is that about Stevie G?
I think Stevie G, the jury's still out on him in terms of a Premier League manager, but he couldn't have done any more to prove himself than what he's done up in Scotland. So you look at that and you go, he should be able to come into Aston Villa and do a good job. He's also the right age for the players in that Aston Villa team to know who he is, respect who he is. And that will motivate them to achieve more. And Aston Villa have got a decent team. I think there's no doubt they've been underperforming under Dean Smith over the last 7-8 games or so, because they've got quality throughout that whole team. There's players in every position that can do a job. And that you can't say the same about Watford. You can't say the same against Burnley. You can't say the same about Norwich City. So I think we won't just see Aston Villa surviving. I think we'll see them getting a comfortable top 10 finish by the end of the season.
But then if it's all about the club, then the question is, why did they change? But I suppose if you lose five in a row in the Premier League, people get nervous.
And it would seem, for some reason, whatever it was, Dean Smith stopped getting a tune out of those players.
Interesting that, I don't know if you've seen this, a lot of rumours linking Lampard to be Gerrard's replacement at Rangers. That looks like could be his destination. So can you separate your head from your heart on this one, Marley? Because your team are in there. Mm. And obviously you're going to have the possibility, the potential, and obviously we don't know how they're going to spend the money, where the money's going to go, and who's likely to come in January. But that's going to be a massive boost for the club. Is that going to be enough with Eddie Howe as well to have Newcastle as the team out of these that survives?
I think so. I think we're starting to see Brentford slip off. And I think they will continue to do so, especially with the goalkeeper out for 5 months. I think that's a huge loss for them. So they'll have to go and sign someone in January maybe and get that right. So I think they'll go with Norwich, and I think Watford will go as well, because I just don't think that much of Watford. I don't think they've got any players that you'd be really scared of, except possibly Sarr, but if you keep him quiet, you've sort of beaten Watford. I think Ranieri's not as good at smaller teams. I think he'll be similar with Watford as he was with Fulham. I think they kind of went down with a bit of a whimper. I don't think Watford are much better than that, so I'd expect them to be down there as well. And I expect Newcastle to get a lot better. pretty bloody quickly as well. It's weird. I think when we were on a podcast last week, we were talking about, I think we mentioned Newcastle, and I went through all our fixtures like that we've got until the end of the season. And I was thinking, right, 3 points there, 3 points there, 3 points there. And the total I got was 35, and we've got five now. So that gets us just to 40. And I was like, oh, Christ. Like, we're going to have to nick a couple of results here and there. But
it looks like it's going to be a low points total to secure survival this year, I think. We're not. Yeah. It's not going to be another 42-point season, is it, where
anything
you need 42
above to sort of 34, you'll probably be all right, yeah. But, yeah, we need to get better quickly. Hopefully, you know, with the newfound tactics and things, we'll get better. And the others won't.
With these new managers, there's going to be some great fixtures in December as well, especially in the second week. You've got Stevie G, Villa play Liverpool, and then Dean Smith takes his Norwich side to play Villa in that same week.
That's
as well.
It's a massive game.
Yeah, yeah, massive, massive, massive. One positive thing from this all happening very quickly, Dean Smith's last match in charge was a 1-0 defeat to Southampton. His first match in charge of his new team is Southampton, so he saved a lot of time in match prep.
Lovely.
So he can get straight into that. We're going to park that there for now, take a little break, and then we're going to come back and chat about the Ballon d'Or shortlist, which is out now. Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily. Jim Salverson, Marley Anderson and myself, Ant McGinley here, and we're looking at the Ballon d'Or shortlist, which is a bit of a misnomer because it's actually 30 long, and interestingly, almost half of it are players from the Premier League. Little pub quiz for you. Only two Premier League players have ever won the Ballon d'Or.
Michael Owen.
Yeah.
And Wayne Rooney.
No, not Wayne Rooney.
Oh, are you sure?
Unless I missed it. Maybe.
Rooney's not won the Ballon d'Or. I don't think so.
Okay.
You said that with such confidence.
Chocolate version of one.
You said that with such confidence, Jim. You made me doubt my research.
Okay.
Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Owen and Ronaldo, yeah.
Yeah, 2008 was the last time a Premier League player won it, and that was Ronaldo at United.
But was 2008 also... Well, no, it wasn't. That's not the case. When was the last time that someone won it that wasn't Messi or Ronaldo? Oh, it was Luka Modric a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah, Modric
did it. Yeah, and I think had it not been cancelled last year, we might have seen Lewandowski win it.
He should have. He's been screwed out of about three now. Well,
that's it, isn't it? I mean, you look at this list, and surely Lewandowski's got to win it this year because Ronaldo's not doing it. Well, I mean, it depends who you talk to, but Ronaldo isn't the same player he has been in previous seasons. His impact at Manchester United has been good or bad, depending what way you want to look at it. Yeah. Lionel Messi is having a bit of a torrid time at PSG by his standards. This is the year where one of the best strikers in Europe for the last 5 years. Surely he's got to win the Ballon d'Or this year.
But then does this show that it's almost like a political thing, like the Eurovision or the Oscars? And it's kind of like, well, let's, you know, you often see this with the Oscars. They go, let's give it to them. Brilliant. Let's give it to them before they depart this mortal coil.
It's that old.
So just taking a step back and looking at this list, as I say, 14 of the 30 are currently playing in the Premier League. And 15% of the list are actually England players. And club-wise, the club with the most players on there, Man City, closely followed by PSG. So from all those, is there anybody that really stands out? Obviously, we've talked about Lewandowski, but anybody that stands out possibly as you're very surprised to see them on that list?
For me, the first one, Cesar Azpilicueta. Look, I like Azpilicueta. I think Azpilicueta has been one of the best right backs in Premier League history. I really do. However, is he one of the best 30 players in the world? Probably not. Like, yes, he's had a good season. Yes, Chelsea won the Champions League and he was a big part of that. He was the captain, whatever. But he's not one of the best 30 players in the world. And you can say the same for a couple on this list. Simon Kjær at AC Milan. Yes, he's had a good season. Yes, he would batter you if you went in a fight with him because he's massive and Swedish and scary. Danish and square and scary.
I think possibly that might be a reflection of what happened at the Euros and how, in how involved he was with the
Ericsson thing.
Yeah,
but it's not a first aid badge. This is the Ballon d'Or.
If this was the, you know, St John's Ambulance Award for brilliant people in football, then Simon Kjær nails it.
I haven't nominated him, but what I'm saying is, then it comes down to, like, are we saying the best person or the best player? You know, the person that's kind of like.
Is this a humanitarian award or is it a football award? Because it's. My opinion, the Ballon d'Or is the best footballer in the world.
Yeah.
And that, over the last 12 months, has been Robert Lewandowski by an absolute stretch. So anyone else might as well not turn up, but I think Lewandowski is going to get knackered out of it again.
I mean, it's interesting to see Riyad Mahrez on there as well, I think. Because, again, he's had a good season, or he's had a good 12 months, but is he one of the best 30 players in the world?
Does he get in Man City's strongest team?
No, exactly. It's a weird list. And there's two things here. One, you look at this list and go, actually, we're in a period of football where the next great players are establishing themselves. So Erling Haaland and Mbappe, they're not quite there yet, but in the next kind of 3-4 years, they're going to be the next Ronaldos, the next Messis, the next great players. Phil Foden, you'd probably put in that list as well. Mm-hmm. It feels like a fallow year for the Ballon d'Or, because the players that we're talking about, the great players, aren't necessarily the great players at the moment. They're not quite there yet, or they're fading into the background. So it feels like it's a transition period. And the other thing is, the Ballon d'Or kind of lost its status a couple of years ago. So it's not like the FIFA launched their own, didn't they? Their own kind of world's best player award. Yeah, exactly.
Crappiest name for an award.
So the Ballon d'Or is basically, it's a French magazine that now decide who, what they're... It's like the FHM Top 100 High Street Honeys or whatever it is. It's like they've just decided to vote for their favourite players.
I don't know what that is.
I am looking at this list in a completely different light now.
But it's like, that part of it is, yeah, they want to recognise players. Part of it is they need to, in some way, create conversation and create headlines. And I think that's why you sometimes see, that's why we saw Luka Modric winning it a couple of years ago, because it was attention grabbing. That's why you see the likes of Riyad Mahrez and
Azpilicueta.
Yeah, exactly, on this list, because it's to create a conversation rather than actually necessarily to flag these players up as the greatest.
Mm. Now, in terms of how do you define the greatest, that's the other question, I think, when you look at it. And so Harry Kane's on there, so obviously Golden Boot winner, but hasn't won any trophies. You know, he's made it to a final in the Euros, he's made it to a semi-final, he's made it to the final of the Champions League, but hasn't got those medals. So then you go, well, if you're looking in that respect, somebody like Jorginho at Chelsea, who's got the Champions League, do you look in that sense? But then which counts for more? Is it your domestic career or your international career? Because the Polish team have been nowhere near the top, but then it's Lewandowski's been the standout player for them. So, you know, is it just a real mix of... How do you even make the decision? Because I suppose the problem is it's always been quite easy for the last 10 years, because it's been a case of going, do we go Messi or Ronaldo? Mm.
In a Euros World Cup year, you'd obviously expect that to carry a lot of weight, which is why... Donnarumma will probably be in the running. He conceded one goal during the Euros, one or two goals during the European Championships, and that's got to be worth a lot.
And he's been on the bench all season in the league for PSG this year, so he hasn't cancel it out?
Yeah. Well, he hasn't contributed to their terrible form at the end of last year where they didn't win it, or this year either. So that's probably a good thing. That goes in the positive column. He's been all right for the reserves. It's like, so yeah, I think probably an Italian player might stand out and might end up edging it, but it's a really difficult year to call.
Why is it that we struggle to get players from the Premier League actually getting down to that final three and actually winning it, especially when you've got somebody like Mo Salah, who is in the form of his life and arguably right now is, you know, you'd possibly pick him over Lewandowski in your side if you had the choice.
If you were basing it on this season, yeah. I think it's difficult to disagree with Mo Salah. He is the best player in the world at this particular time, but it's over the last 12 months. I think Premier League players sometimes struggle to feature in these lists. Again, going back to what we were saying about Norwich, it's a hugely competitive league. When you've got Messi playing in Spain and playing against, I don't know, Dijon or whoever it is twice a year where he can dribble past 11 players and slot it in the top corner, that highlights reel suddenly looks a little bit better. But when you're playing week in, week out against Premier League teams who are all competitive, apart from Norwich and Newcastle and Burnley, it's more difficult to impress, and I think it's more difficult to look like the world's greatest player. So it is more challenging for a Premier League player to sparkle in a list like this, I think.
Speaking of sparkle, 5 kilograms of 18 carat gold is contained within the Ballon d'Or trophy, which I'm sure like all those footballers need. Do you know how much money they get for winning the Ballon d'Or?
I didn't realize they got anything.
No, they don't. They don't.
Okay. Yeah,
they just get a big night and a party and they get the Ballon d'Or. Just before we leave this, one name that surprised me to see on there, but I was also quite pleased to see in a way, was former Premier League striker Luis Suarez, who's sneaked in at the bottom of the nominations there as well. And again, towards the end of his career.
Yeah, I hope the headlines and Suarez himself has sent Ronald Koeman a message about that. Like, look what I've done after you let me go for free. He scored 22 goals, I think it was, for Atletico as they won the league. And then Koeman got sacked, so happy days. Everyone's a winner there.
I mean, I love the fact that he's on that shortlist, so he's in with a chance of winning it. Obviously famous for scoring lots of goals, but also infamous for that biting incident. So he's probably the best man to check how much gold is really in the trophy. Right.
Reminds of that Simpsons episode where Homer has to give the key to the city back and it's got bite marks in it because he thinks it's covered in chocolate foil.
Right, we shall leave that there for now and come back. We're going to look at the final games in this international break as England are 1 point away from securing top place in the group and going through to the Qatar World Cup. Hello and welcome back to part three of, well, it's not welcome back, welcome to part three. Welcome back, and this is part three of the Football Social Daily, and we're looking at the final round of fixtures in this international break. England travelling to San Marino, needing just 1 point to secure qualification. There's been quite a few players have pulled out, another five players have pulled out, including the Man City pairing of Jack Grealish and Raheem Sterling. Conor Gallagher from Crystal Palace has been called up. And, well, this technically, theoretically, should be a walk in the park. But some of you may be old enough to remember in the early 90s, England needed a big win over San Marino and started the game by conceding to what was the fastest ever goal at the time. I think 8.3 seconds San Marino managed to score in. There has to be a really big swing. Poland are playing Hungary, who obviously England did all right against. But I think there has to be a six-goal swing, England to lose, Poland to win. I'd say it can't possibly happen, but there seems to be a lot of stories everywhere just talking about the biggest ever shocks in international football.
I mean, you mentioned that one goal that San Marino scored. What was the final score that day?
7-1.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure that was an international shock. In fact, San Marino have played England seven times. The aggregate score from those seven games is 42-1. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, but how good was the one? The one goal. Name me any other scorer, like any other goal you remember.
That guy.
It's that one goal.
That guy will have streets and restaurants and huge buildings named after him in San Marino.
Yeah, well, he's still
an absolute legend.
David Gutelieri, I think his name was, and he runs a tobacconist in San Marino, and he's still there, but he's still heralded as a bit of a legend around the town for scoring San Marino's one goal.
And he held that record as well until Christian Benteke popped up a couple of years ago and did a faster goal. So, he did it in some style.
San Marino are the worst team in FIFA's rankings. They're absolutely rock bottom of the whole thing. So, there will not be a shock tonight. It doesn't matter which team England put out, they will score goals.
All right, I'm feeling there's been quite a lot of negativity going out here, so I want to give at least one.
I love San Marino. honestly, it's my favourite Wikipedia page in the world.
What's your second favourite?
There isn't one. mainly because there's a section in it called List of Matches Not Lost by San Marino, and there's seven matches, and three of them have been against Liechtenstein, a 0-0 draw in 2020, a 0-0 draw in 2002 draw back in 2003, which I think was the only time they've ever scored two goals in a match, and a 1-0 win in 2004, the only match they've ever won. They beat Liechtenstein in a friendly in 2004, and Andy Selva, their top goal scorer ever with eight goals, has he scored the goal that day. So what a legend.
I mean, that is, considering what we were talking about and the pressure in the Premier League and losing five games in a row, I don't think they have that same kind of pressure with the management there at San Marino, because they've only ever had six managers, even with that record. So that's a pretty safe job to have. Where would you fancy it going? And this is, I'm really worried what you might say at this point, Jim. But if you were to have San Marino playing Norwich, maybe Dean Smith comes in and organises it as a morale building exercise.
San Marino is the job that Frank Lampard's been waiting for. I mean, it's one he can't mess up. I'd like to see Gareth Southgate being bold in this game, because I think we've seen on a fair few occasions Southgate bringing young players into the squad and not playing them, not giving them that opportunity, bringing them in for the experience. And this is the perfect opportunity to give some of those young players a taste of international football. And Conor Gallagher is the obvious one, who's had an absolutely brilliant season for Crystal Palace and probably deserves his England call-up. And if he does make that appearance tonight for San Marino, he's going to have played for England before he plays for his club, because he's never made a first-team appearance for Chelsea. Which is, I'm not sure, I'd love to know if that has happened previously.
So it almost happened with Hudson-Odoi as well.
Did it?
I also want to say with Theo Walcott, it almost happened when Eriksen brought him to the World Cup, because he'd played for Southampton and Arsenal had signed him, but I don't think he'd actually made a first team appearance at that point.
No, very true. But he was signed to Southampton, so he was owned by Southampton. Whereas Conor Gallagher is a Chelsea player. And still hasn't played for Chelsea, obviously, other than playing for Crystal Palace. So it'd be nice to see Southgate mixing it up tonight and playing a few extra players. But it's difficult to get excited, isn't it, when you've got so many players clearly disregarding the fixture because they are ill, inverted commas, and dropping out of the squad.
Yeah.
It becomes very difficult to get yourself excited about a game against San Marino when it feels like qualification is secure. But credit has to go to Gareth Southgate for, again, in a very pragmatic fashion, securing qualification to a major tournament, because It's a long time going back since England have missed out on a major tournament. And that's partly to do with the qualifiers now being a little bit easier and being a bit of a walk in the park. There's no real opposition in these groups, but partly to do with the fact that Southgate has managed his way through it really well and often pragmatically.
But how much of those players withdrawing from the squad is down to the players themselves and pressure from their club and club managers? Because, say, for example, somebody like Harry Kane, you know, he just needs a couple more goals to break the all-time England record now. He won't care at the end of his career when he looks back and he says, well, like, seven of those goals were against San Marino on a Monday in November. He's just going to take all those goals and go with it. But obviously, especially when you look at the pressure in the Premier League, you know, there's been a lot of illnesses. I mean, we've just seen Henderson's gone back with an injury. I mean, we never get the full details of these. They vary from illness to personal matters, all these things. It is a great opportunity for the other players coming in, but I'm just curious as to, I mean, do you really think that the players just kind of go, oh, San Marino away, I don't fancy it?
I'd fancy it, me. It's a nice, easy game. And it's in Italy as well. Like, it's not a long flight. It's like 2.5-3 hours on the plane. It's a nice place. It's warm. It's warmer than England. It's not like Albania or Andorra or something like that, where it's like you've got to fly forever and get to some like airport made out of tin and, you know, get on a plane with like one working propeller and stuff like that. It's not the worst place to go, San Marino.
You're just saying this so they give you a mention on the Wikipedia page, aren't you?
I'd love that. I keep pitching to my girlfriend that if we have a kid, we're going to go, when she's 8 months pregnant, we're going to drive to San Marino. It's going to be born in San Marino. And it can play for San Marino when it's like 20. And it'll go down as like the new Andy Selver or Paulie Galtieri or whatever he's called. So we'll see how that one. Keep updated on that one as to how that conversation goes. But it's not that bad. It's a nice, easy game. Like, Conor Gallagher would be bang up for it, probably bag four on his debut or something like that if he gets a game. Players like Smith Rowe will love it, enjoy the sort of occasion. Whoever's in goal will have to wear two T-shirts because they'll get bored and might get a bit cold. But it's just one of the things. Like, we always have that conversation as well every year, don't we? Like, should they be in the qualification thing? Like, yeah, they should, because they might just bring an upset one day. They might score against England after 8 seconds, like they have done before. So I quite like these games, even though they are terrible to watch because it's just, it's like a training session, but it is what it is.
There's an element of negotiation, I think, that goes on. And I think one of the things that Southgate deserves huge credit for, and there's people saying he's taken England as far as they can go, and maybe tactically he's not the best, but in terms of the way he's managed England's relationship with club football, I think he's done very well. You rarely hear Premier League managers now moaning about the amount of playing time their players have to play on international duty or injuries they're getting. Probably Klopp every now and again. Yeah. I've never heard him, but he probably does. But then, so you look at the players that are pulling out, I'm sure through sickness or calf strains or whatever it is, I'm sure there's a amount of negotiation that's gone on there saying, look, we'll give you this player, Jordan Henderson, for the first game, but then for the second game, you need to release him. We need to have him back. So you can have him for the qualification, but then when it's done, you release that player back to the club. I'm sure that is the situation that we're looking at, that there is that kind of
50-50. Yeah, it's not a coincidence that he gets ill between, you know, Saturday and Sunday, between the Albania and San Marino games. But it's one of the things, isn't it? It's as see-through as anything, but... Yeah, maybe Jordan Henderson gets deep vein thrombosis and hasn't quite packed his flight socks to get him to San Marino.
I do think Harry Kane will play, though. I'm mentioning him, bagging him three in the week before, and he hasn't pulled out. He is still available. So I'd fancy him to feature, and I think there is a player who would benefit from bagging a load of goals against San Marino, because he needs that confidence lift at the moment. And he would have got it partly against Albania, and now going back to San Marino, if he can get another hat-trick, he goes back to Tottenham with his tail up, with Antonio Conte believing in him, and that will surely benefit him and the club going forward into the rest of the season.
Yeah, and for all the lack of performance he's had with Tottenham, I mean, some of that's got to go down to supply and those kinds of things. But, you know, we were talking about it in yesterday's show. I think he's got 7 goals for England since the Euros. So that's, and there's not been that many games, so there's a consistency there. And we know he'll, you know, remember the video where he bet on his, I swear on my daughter's life that ball went in off my foot, trying to get the extra goal. For the, you know, that man loves to get a goal credited to him. I just wanted to finally just give a little mention to Connor Cody, who's going to start tonight. How good is Connor Cody? Is he just a backup player? During the Euros, Gareth Southgate made a point. He didn't make a single appearance, but Southgate, whether that was man management or down to the influence that he has on the dressing room, it's going to be his 8th start tonight. But realistically, with the players that are in front of him, I don't think, you know, unless things change drastically, we're going to see him lining up at the World Cup.
No. I think he's very much, he's backup fodder at the moment for the England side. He's not quite got the pace, has he, to really shine at international football, I don't think. And there are just better options at the moment, and there'll be more options coming through. So from what I hear, he's a great player to have in the dressing room. He's kind of one of those, cliche, natural leaders. But I don't think he's one for England's future. He's not going to displace any of the people ahead of him in the pecking order in the short term.
How important is it to have somebody like that in the squad, though? Because you're potentially holding up, you're taking up a space that could be filled by somebody who was faster rather than somebody who's a nicer person.
I think it's very important. I think building a squad, especially at a tournament, is about blending the personalities, and you've got to have players there. Like, traditionally, over the years, England have been a bunch of individuals who all flipping hated each other. Like, for, you know, during the early 2000s and the 90s, where we had that sort of golden generation, they never liked each other. The club rivalry was too big, and now it's lesser so. And also players like Connor Cody, who've put in the hard yards to get to England level, they're massively important. Even though he's not one of the best 5 centre backs in England, English centre backs in England, he's still very important to the team morale and stuff. I think he'll be one of them who, if there's someone ahead of him, he won't be hoping that he makes a mistake. He'll be hoping he keeps a clean sheet. And it's that type of, he's almost like a coach around the training ground. I think he's been around the game long enough to know that he's not the best option. He's not going to displace Stones or Maguire or possibly, you know, even like Ben White or Mings or someone like that. So he knows that, he knows his place basically, and that's massively important, I think, because he can just get on with being sort of a good teammate and passing on his experience to the younger lads, coming in and doing a job solidly when required, even in these little dead rubber games where it's only San Marino. I think he's a great sort of leader in that dressing room, and that's massively important in international football, I think.
And we'll leave it there because I can see that Marley is itching to go and get back on the San Marino Wikipedia page.
I'm already on it. I'm now on one which is called San Marino National Football Team Results, and it's just a sea of red. If you can see that. It's just a sea of red things there. There we go. There's the one win against.
Looking at my five-a-side league's results.
Fantastic.
let's send a link out to this on the Football Social Daily Twitter, so you can share the joy that Marley obviously has. Thank you very much, Marley.
Cheers, guys.
And Jim.
Ta-la.
I've been at McGinley, and we'll be back with all the latest Premier League news. And we'll start looking ahead to those fixtures and those first games in charge for Dean Smith with Norwich and Stevie G with Aston Villa on tomorrow's show. Thanks for listening.
Football Social Daily from Sports Social. Find us on Twitter at The Sports Social.